is an uncle, I'll be their uncle.
All right, okay. Uncle Bob.
Bye, Uncle Bob.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. And note that, audience, I just acquired a new family right here, live, on the air.
Bye, everybody.
All right,
welcome,
great.
Girls.
All right, talk to you later. Soon. We'll talk to you tomorrow, probably.
Yes.
Okay, great. Good night.
Good night. Good night. Bye.
Bye. Now, let's see, Greg. Well, who's here, Greg? Not many. Brian's here. Brian, did you hear that?
What'd you say?
Did you hear that? Did you hear some of that discussion we just had?
No, I just tuned in 5 minutes ago. You know how it is, Pop. That's the deal. You catch me out bond for 3 minutes, and then you ask me, how long have I been here? 3 minutes.
Yeah.
I just heard some women that seemed to laugh a lot. That's all I heard.
Yeah, no, you know who they were? That was Jermaine's family.
Uh-huh.
Remember Jermaine?
Yeah, the fashion girl.
Yes. That was her three sisters, all of them having pretty exciting careers. And there are things being planned around them.
Now, I called in earlier and I heard the Evergreens and they were talking about lineage, genealogy and lineages.
Yes.
Does that have something to do with them?
No, but just before I played it, they weren't sure what their lineage was. I asked them, and they didn't know. And then they heard this reading, this session here, where Ian says, the Evergreens say, increasingly more, lineage will not become important. And so then that got them talking about it and how they don't know what it is, and then they're okay with that. So then we came on after that part of the session, and it was a resonant synchronistic, another serendipitous synchronous event. Because lineage was their issue. I didn't know that lineage would be discussed here. So it fit them perfectly.
So Jermaine does fashion. What does her sisters do?
The one who was talking the most, Nadia, is the she's the hostess of the radio of Playboy Spanish Radio, Playboy Magazine Spanish Radio. And she's a Howard Stern, her show. Really?
Yeah.
She's a Howard Stern. You know, I guess they bring in a lot of Spanish pop culture people and interview them, but they do it with a Howard Stern kind of edge. And Playboy, so that means sex and intimacy is involved. So sounds like she's got a pretty good image, I think. Pretty good gig.
Yeah. How many sisters does she have?
There's Jermaine. There is five of them. One is in Costa Rica. I don't think
wow.
They see her much. But Jermaine has her website, which is Love Alchemy. Love. Just check that out. And the other sister's an architect. And the fourth sister is... young. She's just in college or something. Didn't get a career or identity in that level. So Jermaine and Nadia and Sheila are all functioning organic adult citizens of the United States of America.
And they're from South America?
Costa Rica.
Costa Rica.
Their mother is a very, you know, busy, long-term, long-time employee in the Hollywood costume part of Hollywood.
Mm.
Makeup, costume, props, something like that. That's what she's done. What was I going to do? So I only got another 15 minutes, so I'm going to finish this recording. Can you guys handle
what?
That? It pulses.
What recording? The Evergreens?
Yes, I am doing the UFOs in the Indian culture of Asia, and then the UFOs in the Egyptian culture, and then Atlantean effects, and moving up into the 20th century. So it's a continuation of the series I've been doing. It's the next phase. So unfortunately, it pulses a bit. Some of these discs pulse, and it's a bit noisy and staticky, but... I think you can make it out. Greg says you can make it out. So, I'm going to...
I was very impressed with the build there, Bob. They did really well with their facet communion between the four of them.
Yeah, they're awesome. Yeah. I agree.
They just kept it. Yeah, they've got really good chemistry with their communication, and it's very important the niche that they're in. You know, there's a lot of competition with it now, so I think that these people will keep the Playboy brand up to par with the new competition that's coming in.
Yeah.
From Holland, it is. It's a Dutch guy. He's very popular. It's all, you know, this is big stuff. You're talking about, like, Donald Trump network. You're talking about that whole kind of TV, YouTube video thing. And these girls have got it going on.
That's right. They probably will become pretty big. You know, and here's the incredible thing. If they start filming them at home, Jermaine told me already they're going to be saying, they already go, "Did you take your drops today?" We will become a household phrase through them.
Now, I'm looking forward to checking out the website. What's it called again? Alchemy?
What is her website? Let me just check that.
I'm going to write this down.
Yeah, Jermaine is Love Alchemy Love. So LoveAlchemyLove. LoveAlchemyLove.com. That's Jermaine's site. And you look up Nadia Renner. No, she had another name. Look up Playboy Spanish Radio, and you'll see Nadia and whatever her name is on the radio.
I've got a friend here in London called David Renner. And he's got about 1,000 websites or something. Some of them are like really expensive ones as well. But I met him at a business networking thing. So is Renner a German name, is it?
Yeah. Why would this guy have 1,000 websites? What's the point?
It's very big social, you know. I think it's just part of the business network. Half the websites he's got, you know, he just said, "There's nothing that I do with them. I own the real estate name. I don't have it, you know. I've just given up on the websites totally." But I think that he was very supportive in that network. So you go networking with internet marketing people, and he's one of the people there who will just sit there and listen to all the waffle that comes out of your mouth, and then he'll say, "Oh, you can do this or that." A lovely guy, really, a really nice guy.
Very good. Okay, so I'm going to say, yes.
You know, Ion used to use the phrase a lot, the heart of the matter is a matter of the heart. What's that mean to you?
I was thinking about that when I was talking to Hillary and trying to figure out how to use that phrase in relation to what she's saying. So the heart of the matter is the matter of the, is the matter of the heart. There's the obvious meaning, but what would be the not so obvious meaning? The heart of the matter is the heart. So one heart's physical and one is non-physical. It's the you and the you.
Mm.
Heart of the matter is the heart of the matter, and the heart of the matter is looking out at a range, a perspective. It's looking at the you and you. And that's the heart of the matter. And remember, the heart is not connected to the body.
That's right. What's the name of the sac that's in? Pericardium? What is that? No, it's the name of that sac, the heart.
I think it's the pericardium. I think that's the name. Maybe another name. So if you've got the heart of the matter is the heart. Is that what it is? Is that the phrase? The heart is the heart of the matter.
Yeah. The heart of the matter is a matter of the heart.
Oh, yeah. Right. And the matter of the heart is that it's in the sac and not connected. So it's a resonant interval. So the structure of the heart is symbolic of the essence of a structure everywhere.
What if the heart's not what you think it is?
Well, I don't worry about that. I work on that principle. I do not rely too much on my imaging and knowing of what things are, because I'm open to change.
Yeah, like everybody thinks the heart or your heart is this pump that's in your chest, but what if that's what it is? It's a divider pump. What if the heart is actually something else?
Yeah, a divider pump. Yeah.
Right. That's a divider pump. But I'm saying, within your body, something else is the heart. Is actually the heart, not the pump that's in your chest. But something else is actually your heart. Hello.
The heart beats, and that's good enough for me, Brian. You know, as long as your heart's beating, man, it's good. And that beat is very tribal. Marshall McLuhan mentions that as well, about the tribalism. Well, he doesn't mention the word heart or talk about emotion or anything, but I think that the heart is not something to be mixed up with an emotion. It's just a very powerful organ.
Yep. Love is not an emotion. The emotions are identified with the heart. The pericardium must be the container, and the heart is the emotions, or the heart is the container, and inside the heart is the emotions.
What if your heart is actually
when hearts come together, two beating hearts, when they're quite close together, it's quite comforting. You know, it's like that communication without talking.
Yeah.
Well, but that has to do with rhythm. You're matching, you know, you're matching your rhythm once you get close in close proximity to another.
Breath.
And not just the heartbeat, but everything. All bodily functions start to sync up with another. You hear the story about, you know, if two women are roommates or whatever, and, you know, their menstrual cycles start syncing up at the same time and all other functions. But I think that has to do with rhythm.
There's a guy who's it was recommended to me by Bill Harris, and he's got a book. He was a yogi, kind of 30-year master, and his book's called A Big Heart. A Big Heart. And,
Have you ever heard anybody say that the brain is actually the heart? And if you look at some of, if you get into the anatomy of the brain and the way the brain is laid out, sometimes it's actually laid out because you got these, you know, the four, they call them the four chambers or four ventricles. There's other things, but it's actually the brain. Your brain is actually your heart, and not the pump that's in your chest. Have you ever heard that?
No.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah.
I saw this program on National Geographic one time, and it's called, the Discovery Channel, and it's called In the Womb, WOMB. And it's a four-dimensional sonogram kind of thing, and they track the development of a fetus from conception to birth. And the actual original cell of the male and the female that come together into the, you know, one cell with the zygote is actually the foundational cell of the heart. Literally, that's what becomes the heart. And the heart beats outside of the cavity of the chest, and it beats first, and then the brain is formed. And then what happens is the heart migrates over into the chest, and it takes about a week for the heart to actually find its place into the chest of the fetus. And then one day, it's like the brain and the heart see each other, and they click, they sync up, and that's when the brain starts beating the heart. But until then, the heart's been beating itself. So I don't know about this heart-brain thing and what you're talking about, but I believe the whole heart math thing, that the intelligence of the entire being, the authentic intelligence of who you are is in the heart. And the cultural intelligence or whatever, you know, outer kingdom programming. I mean, Ion did say that the heart is in the middle kingdom. And when we did that rewrite, remember how they went on and on about the pericardium and how it protects the heart and it's not attached to the body and this and that?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I remember that. We did that for a couple hours, I think, one night.
Yeah.
Right, but it's almost, and it's interesting you brought up the womb too, you know, because Ion talks about the womb closing, but what if there's another womb in the body, and this womb is not this womb is in male and female. It's in all human creators, the womb, that will never close. In fact, that it's the womb that you want to function and to be open always, not just the, you know, not the womb, you know, that we think of with a woman, you know, and with, you know, giving birth to, you know, a child, but a different womb that all, that men and women have. It is something completely different compared to what we know it.
I've got to chime in, Brian, and just correct myself, because you're so intuitive. The book is called Big Heart, Big Mind. Big Mind, Big Heart. So the mind comes first, and Big Heart, Big Mind, Big Heart. And it's by Genpo Roshi. And the guy on YouTube, who he's been mocked to hell over it. He's the main thinker behind it. His name's Ken Wilber. Have you heard of Ken Wilber?
No, never heard of him.
There's cartoons of him kind of mocking his way of speaking and stuff now afterwards. But, yeah, and Genpo Roshi, if you do his sessions on the YouTube, there's about an hour's worth in 10-minute sessions. He goes through the group asking them questions, going, what is that? What is that about? Because he's always trying to get to what people are saying. Where is it coming from, the heart? You know, so it comes out through the mind, but he'll break it down. So where's it coming from, the heart? So you can help yourself. It's good stuff, but it's also personal development stuff, and it's going into psychology and psychiatry and therapy, and like these guys have done it for like 30 years before they've even been able to be advocates of it and talk about it. It's a really complex subject.
Yeah, and a lot of that, it was like when, you know, you're talking about this, what was her name, Hillary, when she got into the child thing, getting back to child, and when I was listening to her, it sounded to me, you know, because she was talking about innocence, and she was talking about being in a place before, you can call it whatever you want, before you're corrupted, what she's getting at is getting back to a place before the labyrinth, right? Because say it's the books, the newspapers, the TV, the radio, your friends, your family, the people you interact. That's where the labyrinth comes from. All of these rules and regulations that you get from everywhere, from the people you interact with. I mean, everything. That's, you know, this labyrinth gets created, and you develop these rules and regulations. And to me, what she was talking about, instead of getting to this, you know, back to this, you know, child thing, is what she was really saying in my world is getting back to a place before the labyrinth gets, you know, developed in such a way that it just, you know, all it does once you get once it gets developed, or if you allow it, you have so many rules and regulations that you just, you know, it just, the only thing it's good for is fucking you over. And it's what she's talking about. It's all about, you know, hatred or discrimination or war and pestilence and on and on and on. And it's to me, that's what I got from it was, you know, she's just trying to get to back to a place before the labyrinth took over. And, you know, just started fucking everything up.
I've done this in a session, Brian, with a guy, and he's an advocate for Joseph Campbell. You know, have you heard of Joseph Campbell?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, you will have recognized his stuff when you look him up, Joseph Campbell. But this guy from he's from Australia, and he does group sessions. And one of the things that we do is this return to innocence. So it's like that Enigma song, you know, the return to innocence. But everybody do it as a group, and we go through a series of focusing to go into that childlike thing. And then we all walk out the door, which is in middle of the busy part of London, and everybody, all ages, but some people there with their mums there, and everybody, it's very popular and free. And then we'll walk out into the street for an hour, and everybody's walking around, you see people, but you're in that innocent stage of like being like a child, and everything just looks amazing, and you walk out and you're just laughing at everything. I've never experienced nothing like it. But yeah, it was based a lot on the premise of Joseph Campbell, just bringing it into the new age of like talking about, you know, from Yoda, Harry Potter, and so that's why it draws such a big crowd. But that particular session stood out to me, you know, and afterwards when we come in, we all share about it, and then all age groups dancing, like literally the guys ripping all the shirts off, the old women jumping up and down going, yeah, raving to this like house music in a hotel at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah, it was a good session. I enjoyed it. And it was called The Path to Mastery. Is it Path? Yeah, The Hero's Journey. Joseph Campbell, The Hero's Journey.
Yeah, sorry, Robert. I'm in the middle of unloading my wagon here. But no, I'm not familiar with Joseph Campbell.
I explained it to a few of my friends. I even brought a friend with me who's a very, very good, very, very good mind. He can go into that place from the heart to the mind through various Indian meditation within 30 seconds. You know, it would take me, if I was doing well, to get in that place in 30 minutes. But he went to it, and he's like, these people are just charlatans. He's like, we were there. But it's like, but no, and he sat there, and he listened to it, and he goes, I really enjoyed that. Thanks for inviting me to come down. But, you know, basically, personal development is something that is an investment, you know, that people, a lot of people do. A lot of people from the echelons of society, and they get transformational. So I was lucky to actually go there and be able to review his book as well. But that child thing, the reason why it was so good was because I've seen him walking around on his own. He's got kids, he's got dogs, so I can relate with him with the dog thing as well. And he was recommended by a really good friend of mine. He was walking around experiencing it on his own. You know, I could see him doing the child thing. So he's not what he teaches. He's not just doing it for other people. He's doing it for himself. He's just teaching what he lives. And, so I do recommend that. You know, I know I'm waffling on about it a bit, but he was good. Even though a couple of my friends have said, these guys are just charlatans. But I'm a big fan of Tony Robbins and stuff like that, so, and my friend is as well, who's the Asian guy. But, I think the occupational landscape has changed now. That's why I see value in the girls of what they're doing there. It's like they're serving the entertainment industry in a really important way. You know, they're providing a service which is the new landscape that we are now in.
Yeah. Did you hear that? Did you hear Bob talking to that woman? Hillary, did you hear that?
Yep, I was there. I was there when Ion came on as well. It was great.
So she had she had the child thing, you know, getting back to, you know, this place of innocence. And like I said, to me, that was just her trying to get back to a place before the labyrinth. The other thing was she was with this the female thing, and she was talking about all of these, you know, ancient statues or hieroglyphs or writings about the the female or the feminine aspect, right? And she got into this whole feminine thing, and I don't know, for me that has to do with the womb thing, right? In some way, see, there's this division, the division between the male and the female. And I think people are, I don't know, they're getting it mixed up of, instead of them talking about the division, it's more like, It's more like, no, what we're trying to tell you is that whether you're a man or a woman, all human creators have the same thing, right? You all have the womb that's inside of you. I mean, that's just my take on, you know, that's my take on that whole thing. And I think people, I don't know, get it fucking tangled up of this division.
Are you a fan of the Schwarzenegger film? Have you seen that one?
Who?
Let me just interrupt you, Robert. I wanted to clarify something with Brian. Brian, I was switching phones when you were talking about the universal womb. How did you define that, or is that the God within us, that we all have the eternal God self, which is our self-creating womb?
Well, you know, in the Bible, they talk about Jesus, the immaculate conception, born in Bethlehem, and to me, there's a womb in all human, whether you're a man or you're a woman, that's inside the body, you know, around the solar plexus, where Jesus, now in the Bible, Jesus, you know, is depicted as a man doing this, that, or the other, but there's also this thing where, you know, Jesus, or the word Jesus, it comes from, or it symbolizes a fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, and then there are some out there that extrapolate that based on, you know, the words that are in the Bible, that this fish, you know, is baptized not by John, but of John, which means something, which has to do with, you know, the oil and albumin in the body, that this fish travels through to get from the womb, the solar plexus, you know, up the River Jordan, you know, where it's crucified, and then it goes into, you know, then there's this whole process of, you know, the 2.5 days that it spends there, and then it ascends up on up to the Holy of Holies, which is, you know, some people call the heart, or it's in the brain. And then you get into the endocrine system, or the, you know, the pineal gland and the pituitary, and there's other body systems. There's all kinds of different body systems, but that's just the reason I'm asking these things about all of this, you know. What if the heart's not what you think it is, and the womb is not what you think it is?
Right.
You know, and if you look at all these cultures, that's what all the cultures everywhere, they're trying to, and this is just my perspective, is that they're trying to tell you the functions and systems of the human body that. You know, even, you know, you could say in modern medicine, here we are in the 21st century, and then you got a fucking clue what's going on.
Yeah.
I heard you say those words on your show a few weeks ago, that we barely know anything about the human body.
Right. But it's fascinating what you're talking about there, the solar plexus area, because that made me think of Ion when he's talked about the Hara.
Yeah.
And the I don't know how much he talked about it outside of the sessions that I had with him, but I looked up some of the words. And Ion was saying, Hara is the middle part of the chakras. For the women folks, it would be the womb. Is that just the uterus and fallopian tubes? Where do you stop with that? And then he says, the Hara is the whole centeredness. If you do that from your belly button, those are perfect words. It's which part it is. Is it the outside of the belly button or the inside of the belly button? And why do you care? The moral of that story is, let's start from where you are asking, the burning in the belly, which would be in the whole process, when you start coming to the place of alignment, when you are hitting on all cylinders. Oh, here we go. You're not into it. we're giving you the metaphor. Let's go back. So, yeah, it's all pretty disjointed, but I think there are enough words there that yeah. actually kind of are exactly what you're saying.
Right, that the womb is actually
more.
In the solar plexus area
yeah.
where, you know, where this seed germ is born, which
mm-hmm.
represents Jesus in Bethlehem, you know, because then they break down, you know, the word Bethlehem and what they're doing, they're referencing everything back to the body, okay? And then they talk about, you know, the baptism, they talk about the oils, because see, and that's what really got me, because I remember early on, Ion would say these things to me about, you know, the altar and the oil and how the oil flows and the candlesticks and the lampstands, and I didn't have a fucking clue what he's talking about. But I'm getting into some of this other stuff, and it's starting to make sense. I'm like, fuck, is that what you... And, you know, the more you get into it, the more fantastic it is. But what you just said from your session about that, you know, the womb being in the solar plexus, and it, you know, and like you said, you could further develop it, but that's profound to me. And when I was listening to Hillary and she was ranting on about, you know, the feminine and then the child thing, and I'm like, look, she's just trying to get, I mean, this is my perspective, she's trying to get to a place before the labyrinth fucks everything up, the labyrinth of the mind, and then the feminine thing, it's like there's this, she's trying to divide it. She's trying to make this thing between a man and a woman when mm-hmm. it should just be more of a wholeness. Because both man and woman do exactly the same thing. They both mm-hmm. have the womb. They both, you know, produce, you know, they both have this immaculate conception. You know, some say that happens every month it happens, and then there's this whole thing of the oils that are in the body, and how they function, and then they get into the body function, because you, like I said, you're getting into the nervous system, the lymph system, the endocrine system. I mean, it goes on and on, and it hits so, I don't know what the fuck some of them is talking about, because they get into the body stuff and it's like, okay, it just gets so complex. But
yeah, and I agree with what you're saying. I mean, what you're saying is that why do we keep this male-female dichotomy when that's the, you know, partly the origin of so many of our problems? Why can't we see through that and past that and get to the place where we just interact like human beings who are all just descended? Because when you're ascended,
right.
and if the womb is closed, then, you know, women can't feel that they have that superiority over men, where we can produce babies and you can't, because, you know, that's kind of what it boils down to.
Carolyn, can I interrupt for just a second?
Addressed in his film.
Yes, Bill. Bill?
Yeah, I just want to let Bob know that Vincent Eastwood from New Zealand, who was scheduled... I don't know, yesterday or day before, whenever. I'm losing track at this point. He is back where he has internet, and he is actually on the line. And whenever Bob comes back from what he's doing, he might talk to Mr. Eastwood.
On.
Okay, very good.
Okay, great.
What's his dialogue with Brian? What's that?
We're all wombs. We are all wombs.
Brian, watch. He's having a baby with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's having.
Oh yeah. I've seen that. Yeah, I know. I've seen that movie. But no, this is something totally different than that, because
okay.
But
so which one is?
I just want to make this last point.
Wrap it up.
The last point was. See, the labyrinth, right, the rules and regulations, that's a very key aspect into fucking up this whole, like you said, this division or dichotomy between the male and the feminine. And, you know, when you get, especially with Ion, then when you realize those two aspects, then you get to this place of, I don't know, harmony, and you can kind of, you know, figure it out, so to speak, or at least be easy with it, to where it's not so, so hostile.
Distracting. To me, it's just distracting, and it does set up a battlefront where it keeps you from being able to discuss things like, you know, we've all been able to discuss. We never get distracted by that sort of thing. And, I like what you're saying, and we'll pick it up after Bob has his next guest, because, I think it's fascinating. And then when you, as you're saying, you come across these things about oils and albumin and everything, to me, those were the kind of the things that would click in my mind when I talk to Ion, and I try to, you know, place some sort of bridge between what they were saying and what, you know, allopathic medicine was saying, and I get a click point, and then it would all make sense, and I would move on. We're not trying to say about the, you know, the albumin and the lipids that you're not trying to make a whole new rule about it. You're just saying it all kind of starts to make sense that we're all kind of talking about the same thing, but Ion really is kind of making it a lot more simple for us to grasp.
We got to talk to Vinny. Vinny, all right. Where are you, Vinny?
Vinny? I should be right here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Let's see. You're coming through 661. You're a Skype user.
Oh, yeah.
According to my my map here of which call. So welcome aboard, Vinny. Do you know anything about us?
Absolutely nothing.
And I do have a few details here on you. You are known as Mr. News. Why is that?
Because so often I continue to Mr. News.
You continue to do what?
Mr. News.
You continue Mr. News.
Yeah, haven't you ever missed the news before?
Ah, missed the news. So you missed the news, right? You missed the news. All right, got it. All right. You were born in the ominous year of 1984, the same year set out in Orwell's masterpiece and the year of New Zealand's neoliberal economic reforms. I was in New Zealand in December 2007 for 3 weeks. That's my only time, so I know a bit of the country. I was in the upper island. We drove down that island, and Waikamata, the beach. I spent some time at...
No, I think you pronounced it correctly when you said Waikamata.
Wapabadapata or something, Wapamata. Anyways, what part of New Zealand do you live in?
I live in the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, the primate city in the sunny little slave South Pacific island nation. It's just somewhat fantastic.
All right. After working in the telecommunication industry, you quit when you noticed that when you lied to the customer, the company's profit margins went up. How'd that happen? What would you lie about?
You know, actually, that's not even true. I noticed that you could do it, and actually, the one time I did even do it, I didn't even wind up getting the money anyway. But I saw other people around me just kind of like manipulating and being deceptive and everything of that nature. So it wasn't that if I noticed that I lied that the company had grown more profitable. It was noticing that if anybody lied, the company grew more profitable.
All right. Unable to work or have an employer in the conventional sense, Vincent... or Vinny, went out with frustration at the mainstream media. You attacked it?
With a sledgehammer and a hedge trimmer.
And began to make his own news by interviewing the activists about real issues that truly affect New Zealand and the world. The idea is to get the activists who live and breathe the issues and are not bound by corporate or political parties to be the pundits and reporters and watchdogs on the multifaceted agendas of the global elite right here at home. He hopes to one day be part of an alternative media revolution that will replace the mainstream media, for they are no longer relevant. I agree with that. Now, we have an interesting background. My wife and myself, we were part of the elite, and then we created some new actions and new products, so then we moved into a new kind of elite. we offer substance that replaces your cells called RNA drops. That's all I have to say about that. I'm not here to promote it against you or with you or around you. So is there something you would like to talk about that's on your mind today or of concern? What is the issue? If you were given the microphone, you're at the White House, and you had a chance to speak and draw attention to people, people's attention to something that's important, what would you do? What would you explain? What would you point to?
I would explain to people and point to scumbaggery. That which is the actions, motives, and portents of a scumbag. All right. So everybody must admit, there's an awful lot of bad things going down, isn't there? There's activists and whistleblowers getting attacked, imprisoned, murdered, so on and so forth. So much deception, so much corporatocracy, so much enslavement of everybody in pretty much every single conceivable way, from your health to your mind to your country to your general pieces of freedom on a piece of paper, which are only really backed up by violence at the end of the day, because what one is willing to commit to is the person who will win, is unfortunately the lesson of war and the lesson of history. And people, unfortunately, the problem with them is that they've been so poisoned and so dumbed down and so depressed by this terrible, terrible system that they choose to believe that they're not actually capable of doing anything about it, even when you look at history, and the only people that have ever made a difference, ever, in any way, shape, or form, have been really, really awesome individuals who stood up and believed in their own ability to expose scumbaggery and rid their people of it. And I think that's what I want everybody to understand, is that all you've got to do to justify your existence, to help every single person in this entire world with whatever is going good in their life, you must be prepared to endure and to expose scumbags and the various eclectic forms of scumbaggery. Even if they wind up turning their laser beams of scumbaggery production material onto you, or they might peel off your skin such as the toxic, acidic nature of their scumbaggery, you must still endure it. Go through pain, trauma, suffering, all those good things that shape you into a character that is without breakability. If you won't break, if you won't wield the weapons that will protect you, then, mate, we have a real opportunity to make this world something better than what it is now, without being poisoned, without being lied to, without being divided, without being conquered, without being controlled, without being ruled, without being slaves. If you just believe in yourself and stop accepting that you're a slave and start rebelling, be exactly what the elite can see us as, revolting. Oh yes, I am a particularly revolting slave, I am. I don't like slavery, just in general, you know.
Right, so that's a general statement. Any particular advice on how to do and maintain those values you are expressing?
Well, first thing you've got to not do is ask for help. You start asking for help with what you wanted to achieve. As soon as somebody says, well, it's not my idea, it's not my responsibility, I don't really care, you get really discouraged and then you wind up doing nothing. So it's best not to ask for help in the first place and to just freaking help yourself. Whatever it is. You've got a talent, don't you? You've got a skill, you've got an interest, you've got something, anything. Anything is better than nothing, all right? Even manufacturing plutonium in your backyard, okay, is probably better than nothing, because you at least learn that radiation kills you before you die. And there's so many distractions in life, and I think we've become addicted to them. We've become addicted to drugs, alcohol, entertainment, sex, and stupidity. Mostly addicted to stupidity, I think. To actually think that stupidity is something that's cool. Oh, I need poison, isn't it funny? No, it's not funny, bro. It's poison, okay? Breathing the laughing gas and cackling yourself to death is not a healthy alternative to sanity. Okay? That's why I prefer to use coping mechanisms. Best coping mechanism to come up with is laughing. You'll either laugh or you cry, and I can assure you, crying is far more depressing. Not quite as much. Oh, look at them, they're killing people in other countries that I've never met and don't actually have any emotional attachment to, but I've got enough empathy to actually feel it, so I cry. Oh. Or, you know, you can crack a joke about it. For example, do you know, on Valentine's Day in Iraq, you know what kind of flowers you get? Depleted geraniums.
But you know, Vinny, we offer, you're bringing me back to our product, we offer a product that once you ingest it, you do not get affected by radiation. And you also don't get affected by the negative news that might appear to be swamping over you. You actually get in a pretty happy state. And you also get a lot of energy. So I would always recommend our RNA drops to anybody. But I also am a thinker. Have you ever heard of Marshall McLuhan?
Marshall McLuhan?
Yeah. You have not heard of Marshall McLuhan?
I'm only 28 years old. There's a hell of a lot that I haven't heard of, if you forgive me.
All right. Well, Marshall McLuhan came up with some ideas different from Orwell. He purposely decided to present a different map of the present and the future, and he did this in the middle 20th century, to counter the effect of Orwell. He was equally independent, radical, and not a dupe of the mainstream media, but he coined the phrase and popularized the phrase media. His book was called Understanding Media, The Extensions of Man. And I use a lot of his thinking about the situation, and I would say that George Orwell described 1934. McLuhan went so far that Orwell was describing 1900. So I don't personally use Orwell as a guide to where we're at. Now, do you have any American writers like Noam Chomsky that are your favorite, or any New Zealand thinkers? Where's something we can see what's influencing you or what you use that I might be able to get a beat on to compare what our self-criticism would be of each other?
Look at it this way. If you can think of a name that I haven't interviewed, it's starting to become more and more difficult because I get really big guests and lots of them, lots of different ones. I don't usually repeat the schedule. I'm trying to get, like, as many new different ideas from named and unnamed researchers from around the world so that I can accumulate vast sums and libraries of knowledge for which to, you know, sift through, process, and come up with a sort of view of the world based upon as much possible information as conceivable. And I don't really know. This is the problem. Because there's so much knowledge out there, it's impossible to know everything. I think basically the best idea is just to figure out where you are at this particular point, figure out what you've got going for you and what you need to do about it. Because I'll tell you what, the universe and the entirety of its existence ain't your frickin' responsibility. You and your own life are your responsibility. And by extension, your children, extended family, friends, etc.
Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, live from nuclear-free New Zealand, from the fabulous Fluoridated.
Okay, I just went to your website, and I'm looking at your list of interviews, and I see there's a general trend of writers in that, not all, but you see you have George Norrie, and a lot of the people you interview, like David Icke and us, others. I was the one who did this first 30 years ago. What I would do is I would take fringe information and I would not have a political point of view, and I present a whole range of my beginning sources were Mae Brussel, Dr. Peter Beter, Lynn LaRouche, Sherman Skolnick, and Marsha McLuhan. And so I would present exposés of situations, and no one would know what political grouping or category I came from. And so I think I was the first to do that. And it looks like you're similar to that. You're presenting any kind of rebel or critic or innovator, and you're not favoring the left, right, or center. Am I correct in perceiving that?
Yeah, pretty much, because the left wing and the right wing are of the same vulture whose head is at the center that eats your eyes out when you're starving to death in the desert.
Yeah. Sean David Morton there. So you actually, G. Edward Griffin, you're interviewing Webster Tarpley. He started off working for Lyndon LaRouche. Did you know that?
No, but he was given his first radio show by Danny Romero at Republic Radio. Did you know that?
Yes. And Dr. Yeah. Rima Libo visited our place in New York City. Libo visited our home in New York City 15 years ago.
I was on Dr. Rima's show not too long ago, but we're kind of trading a bit back and forth. We make each other laugh.
Right. Where is she based out of now? Do you know?
I think it's Chile.
Chile, really? You know, her boyfriend, husband, was the general that was made fun of in the movie. Did you know that particular movie about the scientist who looked, the Pentagon scientist who looked into the paranormal?
No.
Yeah, I forget. Stubble Street.
Stubblebine
is her husband. You could Google Stubblebine and see the movie.
No, I know that. I just don't know the movie name.
Right.
The Men Who Stared
at Goats.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
So, I take a different view than all these people. It can be very complex. It can be simple, but what happened is that as I did what you did, explored knowledge, I hung out with all the geniuses in different worlds, different areas, it actually evoked something called ION, which was not a channeled entity, but a force that communicates at the...
It's true that ions also repel morons.
Yeah, that's right. Now, Do you know about ION? Did Matthew Hurtado tell you about them? It. ION.
Me and Matthew haven't met or spoke as yet. I mean, I think he had a show on American Freedom Radio at one point on Saturdays.
Yes.
I'm not sure if he's still doing it.
No, he's not. I don't think he is. He now has a book out. But the... I don't take a critical view of things anymore. I say we live in a post-information society. On many levels, there's nothing to be communicated anymore, and you're on your own. And now you can overlay and connect to other people and share perspectives, but being in the informing process has been seriously amputated by communication media that are taking on a reality of their own. This would properly be known as the Matrix in some way. And I see myself working with ION as post the Matrix. We're not, my wife and I are not in the Matrix anymore. So I'm not interested in people who are worrying about the Matrix, are fearing the Matrix, coming up with alternative views to the Matrix. I am not a critic, even though I can enjoy and speak various kinds of criticism, but I'm dealing with a post-information systems. Many people are looking for the cold fusion battery. Well, me and my associates have the cold fusion battery. Now, there's many people make that claim, but we actually have one. And it's a lot of interesting implications. And it's an issue of how to bring that forth. You would be familiar with that. You've interviewed enough people. If you had the cold fusion battery, free energy battery, you know, how would you release it? What would you do if you wanted to keep...
I'd, I'd kill the person that came up with it, confiscate the technology, replicate it, and then use it secretly in underground military projects so that if you get caught with this technology, people won't even know that it exists and deny it and call whoever found it a crackpot.
Right, that you would do what the establishment would do.
Well, I'd be forced to do that by what the establishment would do because I plan to create such devices and get killed in the name of doing it.
You plan that.
Well, no, I just expect it to probably happen at some point. You know, I expect the worst and hope for the best. You know,
okay.
Why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free?
Right. Well, so we're in that boat. We've got the technology, and we're trying to avoid being killed, and we're trying to figure out how to release it without being killed. That's the main point, and that's our problem. Right.
I think government biowarfare won't give us the answer. Let's release it, much like a virus. Okay? Computer virus.
Yeah.
That starts infecting people's computers all over the place with blueprints of this technology. And then once it's out, there's no need to kill nobody, is there? Because he's not the sole arbiter of the information.
That's true. But some of the ways it's made requires a special formula that we usually seem to be the only ones who have the means to make it. And that's because we got non-physical or ion helping us. And that's a unique expression in the world today, is ion, the way it operates. But so you've made some general statements. Is there any particular things we can... Well, you're not worried about anything. You're not...
quite the contrary. I'm extraordinarily worried about everything. And it's because I'm extraordinarily worried about everything that I rely on a relentless sense of humor in order to prevent me from probably cutting my wrist in the bathroom this evening.
Yes. Now,
this is the problem that everybody has at some point in their life, is that stuff is really, really dark, man. It's actually quite harsh. And so if you don't have coping mechanisms... you're not going to survive it, really. And I think that laughter is greatly missing in the truth movement. I call my show The Lighter Side of Genocide. And it's true.
Yeah.
And it's not because we only look on the lighter side. It's that you've got to be able to see it whilst you're sticking your head right into the darkness and immersing yourself in it so that you can at least come back. Because there's so many of us in this movement that have looked into the darkness and we haven't come back. It's corrupted us. It's turned us into bad people, just like the people that we got into this movement to expose, the corrupt, the vile, the betrayers, the infiltrators.
Yeah, that has happened so much, I personally don't use the terms dark and light or good and bad anymore. That's how I got past that issue of people getting lost. I agree that it would appear a lot of people got in trouble staring into the competition. But I don't look at that. I'm blind. I rely on how I hear things, and that's only tentative. I like Captain Beefheart's phrase, I'm not really here, just hanging around for my friends. That's one of my positions, and it turns out my friend, Ion, is quite an imposing phenomenon. So... I don't consider it dark. No, not anymore. I don't consider it light.
So you don't do you not believe that there's actual bad people out there doing bad things?
No, I don't. I don't believe there is. I do not.
So you don't believe that the elite kidnapping 400,000 children in the U.S. that are never seen again, 100,000 in the U.K. that are ever seen again, that are killed and brutally tortured and raped is a bad thing?
No, I don't. I don't think that's a belief. A bad thing, because I don't believe that we die or that there is an ending. If these people are being killed, they're going into bliss, known as the guff, and having a pretty good time. And they actually, every death's a suicide is one of the principles I explore, thanks to Ion. Every death is a suicide. Now, if this looks like mindless, a mindless attitude, I don't mind if it's perceived that way. But I certainly don't regard anything as a problem anymore. Nothing.
So if you break your leg, you don't regard it as a problem?
No, because with the RNA drops...
If there's a mountain lion chasing you, you trip and break your leg, and the mountain lion is nearly on you, You're not going to scream out in pain when it happens? You're not going to fear for your life when he's on you?
If I have the drops, they would help me diminish the pain, but I would consider that I deserved that. I had created a situation where I allowed that event to happen. And if I get chewed up, I know with the medical products we have that I can get these things fixed up really quickly if I survive.
So the drops will help you if you've had your head torn off by a mountain lion.
Yes, it actually will.
You're dead. Your head is separated from your body, and these drops are going to bring you back to life.
Right. Who's laughing there? Is that Neufeld?
Sorry, me.
Well, you can hear him? Yes, that's okay, Dave. We have Dave Neufeld here. Yeah.